Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Well, today we have a return to Ordinary
Apologetics.
Apologetics for the ordinary.
Well, kind of. We aren't covering a new argument today. Instead, we are rehearsing something we have covered in a past episode as we respond to the question, where is God in a pandemic?
My name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Well, there was a crucial element of that intro missing, as you will have definitely noticed. Unfortunately, rather sadly, Graham and I are by ourselves today. We've got no Mark, he couldn't make it today. But we're going to do our best to shake off the jitters, the nervousness, and just go ahead with just the two of us. How are you doing, Graham?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Yeah. Living through the changes of coming out of lockdown gradually and all that means. So, but apart from that, doing well. Looking forward to the summer. Maybe get away a little bit during the summer.
Yeah. I suppose you're spending quite a bit of time sort of working through the, if we're going to come back to churches, how are we going to do it sort of question right now. Is that right?
We are, yeah. We're hoping in a couple of weeks that we can start meeting on a Sunday morning with a kind of limited group with limited functionality. Mm-hmm. But at least we can all be together in one room, so it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems from what I've seen from a few different churches that churches are taking quite different takes on how they go forward, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's part of the nature of the guidelines that they're moving more towards guidelines. It's a little bit less about law, but everyone then takes their own view on, you know, what's good for our local reputation, what's good for not invalidating our insurance, you know, what's responsible behaviour, what can my congregation cope with? So there's all those sort of, you know, localised judgment.
Yeah.
And we were on a call, Mark was on a call the other day, and yeah, there were two churches, you know, both doing a great job, just doing it slightly differently, you know, with a slightly different set of rules or how they're going to do it. One's, some are doing a number of services. One church I was reading about actually had a queuing system. So they were literally going to have people queuing outside. And when you get to, you know, the bit like in a nightclub or something, you know, when you get to the requisite number, everyone just has to stop. Rope it off and that's it. And I can understand that because I think it was in a kind of locality where they weren't highly connected and it was more of a kind of walking congregation.
Yeah.
You know, others are more sophisticated. We're looking at a booking system and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Lots of different approaches.
Yeah.
But it's all in the context of coronavirus, which I think we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so we had a question, I suppose, that was probably, it's probably a lot of people are thinking about, especially non-Christians perhaps, but definitely Christians too, to do with suffering more generally. But specifically the question was, why is COVID happening in the world today? And if there was a God, why doesn't he stop it? So we're going to talk about that today. We'll talk a little bit around some of the principles that we've talked about in the past when we did an apologetic episode on suffering and why bad things happen, but also specifically to do with the virus and things like that. So I don't know if you want to kick us off, Graham, with some thoughts on more generally on suffering, or do you want to jump straight into the specifics of viruses? Because I know you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, maybe we'll do viruses and then work our way towards more general stuff.
Perfect.
Because the viruses, there's a kind of don't know and know sort of answer. Because I think the first answer is, I really don't know.
Yeah.
And not so much the question of why suffering, which we can get to, but why this suffering right now on this scale with this impact? That's a really hard question.
Yeah.
You know, it's a similar question to, and it's a more personal question than, you know, why suffering in general. It's a similar question to, you know, why has my relative got cancer right now at the age that he or she is at, which is much more kind of personal than, you know, why is there suffering in the world in general? You know, why is there cancer? You know, it's why is there my cancer or my relative's cancer? And I think to do with the virus, there is a kind of personal nature to the question, isn't there? Because it's impacting the whole world in some way or other, and it's impacting us personally at the same time. So it's kind of like a general and particular question all at the same time.
Yep.
because it's impacting people we love in some cases, not so much in this area as we talked about before, but you know, across the country, and certainly impacting our way of life. And you could say, well, you know, I understand why this, the world's not perfect, but you know, why this particular suffering? And I think that the I don't know part of the answer comes from acknowledging that God is completely in charge, and that God organizes the world the way he wants to, in the way he wants to, orders things, sequences things, allows things to happen according to his will for his glory and ultimately for our good. But I can't always see how that tapestry is being worked.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can kill ourselves off trying to work it out, or be frustrated if we can't.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, well, I know God always works for good. Oh, I can see the good in that. That's okay. Or no, I can't see the good in this. That's not okay. You know, we have an illness. We learn something. We think, oh, I learned the good from that. We have an illness. Somebody dies. We can't see the good in it. We can't think. Yeah. So I think we can say God is good and God does good, but I don't think we can say we will always see that as to where that is leading.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the I don't know part. There's a few more things I do know that I can talk about, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, I think that's helpful. And I think it's also useful to do the kind of split that we've done in the past, to do with splitting the question into sort of the emotional side of it and the intellectual side of it, because they're obviously so different and the answers to those two things are so different. So we have the kind of intellectual part of this question, which is, you know, big picture, if God exists, why did he allow this to happen intellectually?
Yeah.
And then there's the other question, which is, this is horrible, I don't like it, you know, help me to come to terms with it more pastorally. And so, yeah, it's just useful to just at least highlight the fact that those two are very differently motivated questions. And it's important to understand where the question's coming from, I suppose, before we jump into answering it.
Yeah. And I think the even more challenging thing about coronavirus is it's kind of both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a sort of a general and a particular question. I think just as a sort of a by the way, there's some interesting things about viruses, which kind of lead us into the bigger question.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the answers to suffering is a more localized one, you could say, which is because we live in a broken world. It doesn't answer the big, big philosophical question, but it answers the more immediate cause to say, why is there suffering in the world? Well, it's because Adam and Eve disobeyed God. It's because that fractured the world. It fractured our relationships. It fractured the relationship between creation and humans.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, everything is broken to some degree, although it's beautiful at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know this because I'd always kind of pondered about viruses and bacteria and thought, did they kind of, you know, Adam and Eve sinned and suddenly sort of fluttering through the sky, all these bacteria kind of were raining down on the earth. And I didn't know this little fact that there's more bacteria in and on your body than there are human cells. Because mostly, excuse me, mostly bacteria do a good job.
Yeah.
They perform useful functions in cleaning up your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bit like what do you call those kind of relationships? Anyway, those dependent relationships in other parts of creation where, you know, some
symbiotic.
Symbiotic, yeah, I think that is the answer. Anyway, mutually beneficial,
yeah.
Relationships where an animal helps another animal, and while they're helping the other animal, they get some food or whatever. Yeah. So they, you know, they get rid of mites on a haired animal. Some, you know, bird takes them off, and that helps in some way.
Yeah.
I'm not David Attenborough, so I don't have good examples. But I know that sort of stuff happens out there.
Yeah.
But apparently, it happens with bacteria. So
okay. Yeah,
so here we are sitting here with more bacteria than we have human cells.
Yeah.
I think that's partly because they're smaller, but I think it is. There are loads of them,
yeah.
And mostly they do good. And apparently, that's true for viruses.
Okay,
which viruses don't exist in the same way as bacteria because they don't have like cells and intelligence in quite the same way. They're just lumps of protein that just do stuff.
Yeah.
But there are lots of good viruses too. There are good lumps of protein that do stuff.
Sure.
So I think they're a kind of an interesting example of how at the fall, it's as though, I don't know whether you'd say God actively does this, but there's a sort of fracture, that kind of crack that runs through the whole of creation. And it's sort of the crack line runs through bacteria, because, you know, there they were exclusively good, and now they're mostly good, but actually can be very bad. And here's proteins that were always good, but now they're good and bad.
Yeah.
And
it's,
so that's quite
it's
interesting.
Really interesting, the idea, because I've heard this idea before, which I'm not sure whether I believe this or not, but I'll run it by you and see what your thoughts are. I've heard sort of a defense of some of the natural evils of the world that runs along the lines of, well, you can't have a sort of planetary system like ours without things like earthquakes and hurricanes and terrible storms, because those are natural results of a planetary system that is, for the most part, incredibly healthy. So you can't get sort of rain and clouds and all those things without also having storms. You can't have plates on the planet without having earthquakes. Like those things are results of a good system, which for the most part is extremely beneficial. And these are sort of the natural results. I mean, I don't really know whether that's a good defense, but what have you heard of ideas like that? It's almost like the one you're talking about.
I have, yeah. It's connected with something that I haven't quite landed on, but some people would say there's definitely no death before the fall, because death came in with Adam, and so they would say, you know, no sentient animal dies, at least, or some of them would say nothing dies before the fall. And I've sort of gone through periods of saying I definitely believe that, you know, no animal died. There wasn't a fox that sort of, you know, got run over before the fall. No, nothing good or bad dies. And I've been through a period of that. And then I've been through a period of thinking, oh, I don't know, really, because death and, you know, the decay of plant life is kind of what sustains the next generation and so forth. And I think what I've landed on is that, without doubt, death for humans comes in at the fall, and without doubt, spiritual death comes in at the fall, in terms of the death of the relationship with God that sustains us. But I think it's reasonable to speculate and say, well, I'm not quite sure, but maybe the way it would have worked is that Adam and Eve live in a world with possibly, you know, shifting plates and earthquakes, and certainly they could fall off a cliff. Because there must have been cliffs, you know, as they explored the world. So it must have been possible in principle for them to experience harm. You know, a tree that grows and a branch falls and lands on their head. But I think what would have happened is that God would have sustained them through that. I know it sounds a little bit sci-fi, but somehow God would have sustained them through that, either providentially or in terms of, you know, the tree not hitting them, or would have healed them in some way. You know, a bit like Bruce Willis in Unbreakable.
Yeah, because we're touching on the idea of pain now as a good or a bad thing, aren't we? And it's clear that pain is a defense mechanism that is incredibly beneficial. It stops you from injuring yourself beyond repair. It stops you from having your hand on the hob for too long when you accidentally think it's off and you put your hand there. It's something that is incredibly fundamental and necessary for the continuation of our species. So it's very interesting then to ask, well, what about before the fall? What is pain a result of, purely a result of sin, or does it have some benefit? That's quite a complicated question, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's an interesting one, though. And when you fast forward to the end of the Bible and to the Book of Revelation, I know it's only picture language, but when you've got the idea of a river flowing and trees for the healing of the nations, it kind of implies an ongoing dependence on God to be healed. Now, it could be just a picture that we're just healed, and you know, but it seems like implied anyway that the healing for the no more sin, death, dying, and tears is because God sustains us, not because we somehow develop this unbreakable power in ourselves. And maybe that's a fair way of thinking about the creation before the fall.
Yeah, Shall we talk about...
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Shall we talk about morally sufficient reasons? Because we've... This is certainly somewhere, a direction that we would want to head in if we were taking the question down that intellectual route of why is God allowing this?
Yes.
Do you want to go for that?
So I think, I think you could sort of get us into that. But yeah, just to sort of land what we said so far, half of the question is we don't know what God's specifically doing right now. But we know that viruses are, like everything else, part of the fall. And what we're kind of now delving into is, so why did God allow suffering to happen, the fall to happen? Why did God allow particular suffering to happen right now? Mm-hmm. Which you have all the answers for.
I definitely don't. I have some.
What we need is a little filler from Mark now, you know, just to sort of take us on for a couple of minutes while we collect our thoughts again. But it's just us two.
That's right. We just have to dive straight in. Yeah, so I mean, I guess, let's talk about morally sufficient reasons for a bit. We won't go into as much depth. So if you want to have more focused thoughts on this, then go back and find the podcast on suffering, because that's a good solid 30 minutes that goes quite logically through these arguments. But I suppose in answering this question, one of the things we want to say is it's difficult for us as human beings in our limited time and space and intelligence and insight to make probability predictions on whether or not God has good enough reasons to allow suffering or instances of evil in our world. So let's bring it home, to allow COVID to happen right now. It's very hard for us to make a prediction about whether he has a good reason to do that or not. Now those evils might well look pointless from our perspective with our limited viewpoint, but the point is that given God's perspective, his kind of eternal view of things, they actually might be seen to be justly permitted. And back in the other podcast, we kind of gave examples of that using chaos theory and using that film that we talked about, Sliding Doors, where sort of things go wrong, but then it turns out for the better and you would have never predicted it because that one half of the film seemed to be going so terribly wrong. Yeah, the point being with morally sufficient reasoning that we just don't have the right resources to be able to judge God in that way. And then we want to take that forward and say, actually, if we look at the Bible, there are many teachings in the Bible that would make us think that actually the probability of God allowing suffering rises exponentially. And so we can begin to talk about some of those purposes of God in the world, which seem to increase the likelihood of suffering. But do you want to say any more on sort of morally sufficient reasons?
Just to say that you may have said it, and I was not quite on it, but that we, in a sense, only have to understand that there could be a morally sufficient reason, which is not quite the same as saying, I know exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's helpful.
So there is a humble moment of saying, there could be a reason, but I might not be able to know what the reason is. But given that God exists, and there are plenty of proofs that God exists, and given that if God exists, it's inevitable that there will be things that he knows that I don't.
Yeah.
And there are perspectives that he has that I don't, it's highly likely that I will not understand all of his purposes. But as a matter of principle, I know in general, in my own experience, there can be bad things that happen for good purposes. So there can be morally sufficient reasons for evil, apparent evil. And so I think you put those two things together, there can be morally sufficient reasons for apparent evil in our own experience.
Can you give us an example of that?
And then outside of experience, well, I think the example we gave last time was the injecting a baby, really, with vaccines, talking of COVID. Just by the way, vaccines are a whole controversial subject of conspiracy theories. But in general, we would say if a COVID vaccine comes along, and it does, prove to be an issue for babies, then we'd say it's really good to get a needle and to stab a baby in the arm, cause them a lot of pain, maybe their arm will swell afterwards as well, for a bigger purpose, which is they have immunity. But in the experience of the baby in the moment, this giant comes towards them with a big metal blade and stabs into their arm, and there is no apparent moral spiritual medical benefit. It's all about the pain.
And it's a really good example because the baby in that scenario is cognitively unable to understand what those purposes might be. And in a way, that's us, isn't it? We are cognitively limited, and so limited in comparison to God's cognition, that we can't even possibly begin to understand that he might be doing something bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are loads of examples in the sort of in the kind of animal world, even just with our own pets and stuff, where we do things for their protection, but they can't always understand why. Or, you know, at a trivial level, sometimes dogs or whatever, you're on a walk and they get trapped somewhere the other side of a fence or something. And, you know, some are really intelligent, work out how they can get back, and sometimes they can't. And only you as the owner know that actually there has to be a painful grabbing of the dog and, you know, trying to feed them through some barbed wire fence or something, which is the only way to get them through to the other side. But they can't see it, you know, or there's a stile they have to jump over. And I know it's slightly different, but they're all good examples of how all over the place there are humans and animals who don't have the cognition of what's going on in the bigger picture. But actually what we're doing is they're good. You know, we're rescuing them. We're protecting them from foxes if they're chickens. We're carrying on the walk with them. We're giving them a vaccine. All those different things are ultimately for good.
Yeah. And I think you made the good point that it's, you know, this helps us intellectually get past the probability issue, but it is difficult then, because the next question is, well, what I want to know what the reason is. And like you said earlier, we can't answer that right now, and we may never be able to in our lifetime answer it. And that's, I suppose, the difficult part.
Yeah. And I think, we can talk in general about good answers. I mean, you were going to talk about some biblical ideas about which might be helpful. Yep. And then I could think about some to do with the virus as well.
Sure. Yeah, so I think one really helpful, my first kind of principle is that after we've kind of established the idea of God's morally sufficient reasons, is the idea that the main purpose of life is not happiness, but to know God. So that's the first principle. And that changes things enormously, because there might be lots of instances of suffering which are absolutely pointless in bringing about the goal of human happiness, but they may be seen to be justly permitted and not pointless at all in respect of their bringing about the knowledge of God, whether that be in us ourselves or in other people around the world. And this is where C.S. Lewis comes in helpfully with his kind of God's megaphone idea. He talks about suffering being God's megaphone to the world, because overwhelmingly human suffering brings about the need for trusting for the first time, or for a deeper kind of trust and dependency upon God. So this is potentially one of these reasons that God allows suffering in the world, is that, you know, the main purpose of life is not actually for our happiness and our having a perfect and good life right now, but it's actually to know God. And so if you're trying to achieve that goal, you might approach life in a completely different way.
Yeah, and I think as a sort of nationwide example of that in the Old Testament, when God's people were a nation, you get in the book of Judges, before the people have established themselves fully in the nation, you know, with a king and so on, that they sin, God sends all kinds of bad things on them, mostly enemies, but sometimes illnesses, and it is what causes them to cry out for God and turn back to God. So I think that's true of COVID in the general. That's not to say, you know, in one person's life you got COVID, so, you know, as God's judgment or as God's warning to you, but in general I think it's true that COVID is making us think more about the frailty of life and actually the lack of control we have. And I know it makes us think about that as Christians a lot, so I think it makes everyone think about that.
Yeah.
And I think the danger of rushing to get back to normal too quickly and to say I want to find comfort in being normal again is just losing that kind of, it was good for a moment to really realize people are dying of this, and maybe, you know, someone in my family or me myself could die of it. That's really good, because it makes you realize the frailty of life. It makes you realize what's true all the time. There's a whole load of other risks we take, a whole load of other illnesses. We can step off the pavement, we can be in an aeroplane, you know, all sorts of death options are possible. but we don't normally think about them. We shield ourselves from them. But when it's happening globally, you just can't anymore. But also, I think it's a kind of megaphone that tells us, by the way, you're not in charge. And I think that's massive for our mechanistic society, where we think technology solves every problem. And because God's given us these amazing abilities, we will almost certainly solve this problem. At least fight back against most illnesses, and particularly infectious diseases. We normally get somewhere in the end with them. But in the meantime, it realizes we're not in control. This completely flattened pretty much the whole world. Yeah, you know, some were better than others in the response, but basically we got flattened by it because we're not in control, and that's a great thing to learn. So I can see a good purpose in that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's useful. The second principle that's worth mentioning is that I think you've already sort of alluded to earlier that mankind rebelled against God and his good purposes. So we're not sort of playing on a level playing field here. And that so evils in the world, especially human evils over natural evils, are sort of a testimony actually to how fallen we are and how far from God's good plans and purposes we've strayed. And so far from being sort of blindsided by suffering in the world, Christians should sort of expect it, because God allows sin to take its course in the world, and eventually it only serves to increase our guilt before God and shows us of our kind of our need for him, our dependence on him, our need for forgiveness. Mankind's rebellion against God and his purposes is a second principle.
Yes, yeah, and I think just as a little sub-clause to that, it also means that we need to be a bit more humble about our own suffering and assuming that so-and-so is innocent. I think it's not a helpful category to say, well, you know, why did that person suffer? They didn't deserve it. We all deserve it in that sense. It's not helpful to make that point too strongly either. But I think to go the other extreme and just say, you know, that person dying at 85 was okay, but this person dying at 35 was not okay because they were somehow morally less responsible at that point. You know, they didn't deserve it because they were innocent. They were perfect. You know, they were good. Mm. You know, and none of us is good. Mm. It's just a matter of timing our deaths.
Okay, how much time we got? We've got a couple minutes, so let's just jump to the last thing, because there's more you could say, but again, go back to the other podcast if you want more detail on this. But I think the last thing to say perhaps is that in suffering, just to jump over to the sort of pastoral side, knowing God is the infinite good, and the one hope that you can cling to in the midst of suffering. I suppose deleting God from the picture and set, you know, which is kind of, I guess, the implication of the question, if there was a God, why does he allow this? If you take God out, you haven't really fixed the problem. The problem's still there. You just don't have any hope. Yeah. COVID's still around if God doesn't exist. It's just there's no ultimate justice. There's no ultimate person to cling to. There's no one who ultimately cares about it. So I guess we'd want to encourage people that knowing God is the ultimate good.
Yeah, quite so. And I answered this person a little bit to that question. And one of the things I said was, actually, the fact that you're answering this question shows that you have a morality that God gave you and you have a sense of justice. And it's really good to answer the question, because otherwise we're anesthetizing ourselves to reality. But actually, that God has given us that sense where we inquire and think, why is this happening? It helps us to search for God. And so, yeah, knowing God is the ultimate good. And actually, if you take God out of the equation, you probably wouldn't ask the question, and you certainly haven't got a solution to the question. Yeah. But with God, you have. And it's always worth kind of closing out these discussions always with thinking about the cross and thinking, whenever we get slightly overwhelmed with a sense of suffering and confusion about it, you look at the cross and you think, here is Christ being punished, receiving the wrath of God for the good purposes of God. A tragedy in immense suffering achieved the ultimate good. So we're always encouraged when we look back at the cross And actually it's the cross where the end of suffering is achieved. So the ultimate justice for suffering, but also the ultimate solution for suffering, is achieved at the cross. And that's always a good thing to point back to. And I think we're almost out of time. We've just about managed it without Mark, but we did miss him.
We did.
So, you can say the it's over, Josh. Amen and all that.
Oh, yeah, I've got to say amen because Mark's not here. This one's for you, Mark. Amen. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Ordinary. Make sure you come back next week. We've got a special guest, Tim Jupp from the band Delirious and head of Big Church Day Out. So that'll be a really good podcast. We'll see you then.